Rewiring Your Life with Erica Spiegelman and Marcia Stone. Wellness, inspiration, support.
Welcome to Rewiring Your Life. My name is Erica Spiegelman, and my co-host Marcia Stone is here today.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, yeah. We are so excited today to have on an incredible woman, Alison Raskin. She is a New York Times bestselling author, actress, director, and co-creator of the YouTube comedy channel and podcast, Just Between Us. She does this with a comedy partner, Gabby Dunn. And Alison has co-created and starred in a pilot for MTV and has developed half an hour pilots with 20th Century Fox, FX, YouTube Originals, and Netflix. She is moving and shaking, and she has a new book coming out pretty soon. And we are so excited to talk to her today about her mental health account. It's at Emotional Support Lady, which I just looked at. And there's so much going on. Alison, welcome to our show. We're so happy to have you with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me and for, you know, building up my self-esteem as we dive in.
Yeah. Well, you've done so much. Like, it's amazing. You know, I was just looking up your you know, since we are, Marcia and I are in the wellness industry and recovery industry, and we deal with mental health, but your Emotional Support Lady little pictures on Instagram are very cute, and I really appreciated your messages, and you're doing so much. So can you just share with our guests a little bit about your personal journey and how that's inspired the work you're doing today?
Yeah, so I actually was diagnosed with OCD when I was 4 years old. So I had something called PANDAS, where like I had strep throat and it basically activated the OCD in my brain. And so mental health's always been a big part of my life. And it's always been something I'm working on, something I'm trying to, you know, get a better understanding of, get under control, be able to you know, still be the person that I want to be, you know, despite some disorders that I have. And I came out to LA for college to like go to school for screenwriting at USC and very much thought I would be in like the traditional writer track, only to really get my start on the internet and having this YouTube channel with Gabby, Just Between Us, working at BuzzFeed Video. And through doing all this internet stuff, I was often, you know, kind of playing myself. And so I was often talking about my own life, and my life included a lot of mental health stuff. And I realized pretty quickly that people wanted to hear that stuff. You know, even back in like 2014, 2015, people weren't necessarily as explicit about, you know, living with various disorders, you know, the impact it has on their life. And so I sort of like leaned in to share and focus on that side of myself. While I was still doing all the regular, you know, comedy creator, writer stuff. And then I'd say in around 2019, I had much more of like a pivot into, you know, kind of planting myself more firmly in the mental health space by starting to research and write this book, Overthinking About You, which really examines the intersection of dating and mental health. And then I also went back to school to get a graduate degree in psychology, just to really, you know, supplement my writing and make it so I wasn't just writing for my own experience anymore, but I had a broader, you know, understanding of mental health in general. And so from there, I, you know, writing, the book is finally coming out. I also have the mental health focused Instagram at Emotional Support Lady, which is also a Substack. And so I've had this really kind of wonderful journey kind of back to my roots of the mental health of it all.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. Amazing stuff. So can you tell us a little, just really quick, I'm curious. Your first novel, I Hate Everyone But You, was written with your comedy partner, Gabby Dunn, right?
Yes.
Yes. And it was a bestseller, optioned at Netflix. Can you tell us a little bit how that whole, navigating this whole world of the entertainment industry has been for you? And how do you feel, like, how that impacts your mental health? Or, you know, just is there a lot of, you know, worrying and anxiety around whether, you know, these things are going to actually go and make them into films? Or tell us a little bit about that journey.
Yeah, I mean, they'll say you really need a thick skin in this industry. And I don't think you need it, but to not be miserable, you need it. And so, you know, my life has been filled with really awesome successes and high highs in my career, and also a lot of rejection and a lot of low lows. And this constant feeling of like chasing dreams, feeling like they're so close yet unattainable. A lot of like, oh, finally, my life is going to start now. Finally, I'm going to be at the next level of my career now. And really having to detach myself from that and maintain my drive and my ambition, but also just see my value as a human being and that work is one part of my life, but it is not my entire life. And, you know, also as I do more mental health content, focusing on the quality versus the quantity, you know, like it can get really hard not to get obsessed with the numbers and the subscribers and the likes and the immediate feedback of like, will millions of people like this? But instead it's like, oh, if this helps 10 people, then that has so much value.
I love what you just said. And I just wanted to ask you, referring back to an earlier statement about people are really talking more about mental health and embracing that more now than they did even in 2014 and 15. And I agree with you, by the way. And I just wonder, you know, from your perspective and in your field, how has that helped you to be able to, you know, really sort of lean into that part of your own story creatively?
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. When I was growing up, my dad sort of cautioned me not to tell people that I had OCD because he thought that that would get in the way of me having a career. And then I sort of turned around and built a career off of the fact that I have OCD. And, you know, I think that I view myself primarily as a storyteller, and that's why I feel comfortable working in so many different mediums. And so just really focusing on like, I am telling my story, and whenever someone tells their story, there's a lot of power in that. And just like that now people feel more comfortable sharing their stories back to me has been this really wonderful, you know, kind of turn of events of seeing people opening up and sharing that like, oh, now, you know, hearing you talk about your struggles have made me feel like more comfortable openly talking about mine with my friends and with my community. And that's been just such wonderful feedback to get, and also sort of signals this shift that like these larger, more important conversations aren't necessarily just happening online in public forum from people who are public facing, but are also maybe spreading out just around, you know, other people whose job it isn't to just like tweet about their mental illness, you know, like where it's not their job, but they're feeling more comfortable just talking about it in their daily lives.
Yeah. You light the way for others when you, you know, when you speak your truth. I think that that's very powerful. We definitely see that day to day, Marcia, in our work, our yes. line of work as well. Can you tell us, so this new book of yours is coming out. I know you have a book tour coming out. Well, the book tour starts in the beginning of May, but your book, Overthinking About You, Navigating Romantic Relationships When You Have Anxiety and OCD and or Depression. I think it's hard to navigate romantic relationships in general, and especially if you do feel like you can't let things go, or you wonder why this person didn't work out. Or is that kind of what this book was inspired by? Or did you tell us a little bit about it?
So I had a really tough time dating in a healthy way. Like, I was my worst self when dating. I lacked willpower. I would become very obsessive. I would become very anxious. I would act out. I would, you know, sort of lose control of myself in this one area of my life. And I always kind of said it was like my biggest trigger. And then a couple years ago, I sort of noticed that I was actually starting to date in a much healthier way, that I wasn't getting as worked up about things, that I was able to live in uncertainty with a bit more comfort, that I had gotten a lot better at like being able to vocalize how my disorders manifest in my life so that it's not just like so confusing and like nebulous for my partners and potential partners. And I was like, oh, this is very cool. Like, I didn't necessarily think that this sort of...
What do you attribute that to? Why did it change? Or what was it that changed? Did you make a conscious decision? Was it like a turning point with someone that changed it? What was it?
I think it was a lot of combinations of... I went back on medication in 2017, and that really allowed me to implement a lot of the work that I had been doing in therapy but wasn't really quite able to apply. It kind of drowned out a lot of the noise.
Without feeling regulated.
Yeah. I also really worked hard on my relationship with myself. I stopped talking to myself like I was garbage. I started to really like form a better relationship with myself and liking myself.
So self-love. You know,
like respecting myself, feeling like I had value with or without a romantic partner. And just like getting some control over feeling like if I couldn't lock this person down, then that would be the end of my life. And yeah, and also, you know, I was older, like our brains don't really our brains don't really become fully formed until we're in that 25, 26 area. And so combine that with, you know, being unmedicated, having these disorders, like it was a perfect storm. Like at the time, I just thought that I was bad at dating or that I had these issues that were just due to me, Allison. And now looking back, I'm like, oh no, that was like your anxiety acting up, or like that was like, of course it was this mental health of it all was really impacting you. That kind of transition for me, you know, it wasn't all at once. It wasn't like, oh, suddenly I became, you know, perfect at dating. But like, I was noticing these changes of like, I didn't need the reassurance from partners that I felt like I had needed in the past, that I could sort of like provide that for myself, which was really nice. I didn't immediately assume the worst about other people's behavior because I was, you know, catastrophizing. I just was living in the gray a lot more comfortably. And I realized that like, oh, this is really awesome and helpful. And I want to share this journey so that other people who maybe have had this history or had these struggles can realize that like, you know, with the right toolkits, with the right coping skills, with the right like, you know, conversational guidelines, like you can date in a different way than you have historically. And you can also have less conflict in your relationships around your mental health than maybe you have in the past or afraid that you're going to have.
I like that. I like that a lot. Erica says this a lot, you know, engaging in behaviors that don't betray yourself. And that's what I hear you saying. It's interesting when you were talking, though, I was thinking back to you know, when I was sort of going to high school, going to college and stuff. And, you know, I don't know if it's just the generational gap or what it was, but, you know, I just remember my mother and like her friends and my aunts and whoever was around, they didn't outright tell you to sort of, you know, be a chameleon and find out what the guy likes and then pretend that you like that. They didn't say that overtly, but that was kind of the messaging, you know what I mean? And what you're saying here is that is all trash, and be true to yourself and who you really are. And I mean, there's just such a huge swing in that. And that's like, I'm 52. So that's, you know, I don't know how you, but let's just say that's a 2-decade gap, but that's a gigantic difference in the way that we as women are showing up for relationships.
Well, authenticity has taken root. You know, this is why we always talk about being authentic and speaking your truth and, you know, looking at your narratives and all of that stuff. Allison, that's what we talk about a lot. Well, I mean, just in the work we both do, I think just narratives are something that have to be examined. And I'm sure in psychology, you've come across that as well.
Definitely. And even just like the narrative about what it means for a relationship not to work out. You know, like I used to think that that meant that I was trash, that I was worthless, and that I was unlovable.
Something was wrong with you if it didn't work out. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
something was wrong with me. Right. And if you're looking at it through that lens, then of course it's going to make you feel terrible. If you have a history of being suicidal, it might bring up those feelings for you. It might cause you to self-harm. Like, if you're looking at it through that lens, it makes sense that the impact is going to be extremely negative. But if you look at it through the lens of, oh, I found out that I'm not compatible with this one other person on a planet of billions of people,
puts it in perspective.
It sort of has a different impact.
Right.
Yeah. So, Alice, but so reframing these things, I mean, like, so for instance, I mean, is it because we didn't get, like, if you, you know, tend to think in these catastrophic ways, is it, did we not get the emotional, you know, teaching that we needed to get? Did somebody not teach us how to reframe this? That like, if someone doesn't work out for you, it's probably nothing to do with you. It probably has a lot to do with them, or just not the right fit. Or, you know, I mean, I think we all go through periods when we're younger of like, oh my gosh, this is, I need this person. I love, you know, this is the end all. But I think as we get older, if we learn how to reframe, you have some tools, like then, you know, we can begin to put a different lens on it and see it differently. But do you feel like this generation, for some reason, has more mental health problems around self-acceptance and esteem and being, you know, liked by everybody. I mean, I keep hearing, I have younger cousins. This is the backstory. And they're in their 20s. And it's just like, it's changed so much. We didn't have Instagram growing up. I didn't have Facebook till I was like in my late 20s. You know, like I think a lot of things have changed when it comes now to social media and being liked and, you know, being followed and all that stuff. Can you tell us a little bit about your perspective on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that social media is wonderful in a lot of ways and is also pretty detrimental to a lot of young people's mental health. You know, like one thing is like cyberbullying, right? Like it used to be that if you weren't at school, then people couldn't bully you. But now people can bully you all hours of the day. They can set up websites dedicated to bullying you. You can at all hours of the day know where your friends are and know if you weren't invited. You can compare your likes to your friends' likes and then make a lot of assumptions about what that means about you as a human being. So I think that they're set up to fail in a lot of ways if you're growing up with social media being like an intricate part of your life. And so that's why it's even more important to send these messages of like looking at things different ways and more important to like teach people how to self-soothe, teach people what coping skills work for them, help them recognize when like their thought patterns aren't actually serving them and aren't even based in evidence of real life.
Right, right. I read an article not too long ago that was talking about the constant comparison society that, you know, young people are growing up in now. You know, if you don't get invited to the party, everybody's on their, you know, their feeds on pictures of the party. And then this person got, you know, this type of tennis shoe, but I can't afford that type of tennis shoe. It's just constant. It's ongoing comparison. And it was unbelievable the amount of depression, anxiety, suicidal ideations that are prevalent in high school age kids mostly because of these things. And it's just, how do we fix this? What is the solution? I mean, you know, seriously, it's, I feel like, you know, when Gen Z comes up, they're going to be the first generation that has always had a cell phone in their hand. And, you know, what is the implication of that and the constant access to that, you know, I'm not as good as, fear of missing out, all those things?
I think Gen Z is really smart. And I think that they are more nuanced and like able to see the world for what it is than maybe any other generation before. And that's probably because they have more access to that information than any other generation before. But it's really important to curate your experience on social media to make sure that you're following accounts that make you feel good and not following accounts that don't. So if you recognize in yourself that like following Kylie Jenner, even though it's fun, it makes you feel like a piece of shit, maybe unfollow. Like I don't think it's like helpful or realistic to be like, cut social media out of your life. But there are so many different ways to interact with it. And I think that you can curate the way that you interact with it in a way that's much more beneficial to you.
Yeah. I mean, I think too with kids, like, you know, I have a 2- and a 3-year-old, so I have another generation coming up. And now that I know so much about the negative consequences and negative impact that, you know, social media does have, I will hopefully, you know, educate my kids on exactly what you just said, Allison, about, you know, following people that make you feel good and things that, you know, hobbies that you like and not just, you know, but I think too, there's a little bit of education that has to happen, don't you think? I mean, and also parents have to be proactive and not giving your kids a screen until a certain age and not, you know, when your brain is not developed, like these are sophisticated, you know, things that I know, like, not every parent could say no to this. And if you say yes, you're not a bad parent. But again, there has to be some kind of, you know, overseeing of this stuff, because it really can impact them in such a negative way for the long term. And when we talk about addiction in our own field, Allison, we're addiction specialists. You know, a lot of the reason why people develop this like habitual, like in the early on, habitual dependency to drugs and alcohol when you're a teenager is because you really don't have a lot of education around how to normalize your emotions or how to recognize your emotions and that they're normal and how to, you know, regulate them and deal with them and have coping skills. So I think too, if we could do a combination of all that, that would help the young people coming up.
Definitely. And even just letting them know that what they're seeing isn't an accurate representation of this person's life. That like, oh yeah, it's social media, it's your real life. But it's not. It's not just like a camera following someone around 24/7. It's them picking what they want to share with the world and in what way. And so really getting that, nailing that home for people of like, yeah, it seems like your friend is always happy and that they're always doing stuff. But, oh, there were 2 days where they didn't post anything. Maybe during those 2 days, they weren't feeling so great. Like, you know, just like being a little more discerning with what you are seeing online can be really helpful, too.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. When you're going to your book signings and when you're talking to people that have read your books that are just incredible and so creative, by the way, what are you hearing from your readers that makes you feel like, you know, I'm on the right path. This is an important thing. And, you know, I'm on to something here.
This is going to be my first book that's not fiction. So it's like definitely a different experience, you know, coming out with a memoir, self-help. So I'm really excited, but I'm also really scared because, you know, I reveal a lot of myself in this book. I reveal a lot of details that I've never talked about explicitly before. And so I'm a bit nervous for how that's going to be received, but you know, having done a weekly blog now for over a year, first on Patreon and now on Substack, and getting feedback for that kind of writing, you know, it's really wonderful to see how much of our isolating experiences are actually very shared experiences. And that,
of course,
you know, these things that we go through, other people have been through very similar things and at the time felt very alone in them.
You felt alone, of course.
Yeah. And I think probably one of the best feedbacks I've had is people saying that like I've allowed them to be nicer to themselves, to be kinder to themselves. And that's really that like, you know, makes me want to cry. It's like that if I had to
makes
like
your heart.
If I had to like have a mission statement for what I want to do in the world, that's probably it.
Yeah. I mean, and I think I know I can identify with that too. I'm sure you can too, Erica. You know, we come on here and talk about all kinds of different stuff with all kinds of different people and talk about our personal lives. And, you know, Erica's written books and all kinds of stuff. And I think anytime you feel passionate about something enough to put yourself out there, when you said you were scared, my heart immediately went to, I know what that feels like, you know, but I love but I love that we can talk about it and the support that we can offer one another.
Yeah. That's- and you feel vulnerable, but you know, like Marcia, we relate to each other in our stories because we've shared them right when we met. And I think, you know, just being authentic and speaking your truth and, you know, sharing your struggles absolutely will that person that needs to hear it will hear it. And you will help at least one person, you know. That's what I said when my book came out. I'm like, it's just, if this helps one person, I'll be happy, you know. And then obviously it impacts people when you speak your truth. So that's going to be great, Allison. I would not worry a minute. It'll be fun. It'll be a great journey. And congratulations on everything, everything, everything. Yeah. Can you tell our audience where everyone can find you or tell them about your book tour or, you know, anything?
Yeah. Like- so the book, Overthinking About You comes out May 3rd, pretty much anywhere books are available. I love promoting independent bookstores. You can get a signed copy at The Strand, and they do ship internationally. And then,
it's a great store.
Yes, it's an amazing store. And then the book tour, I'm in LA on May 3rd, San Francisco May 4th, Chicago May 9th, and New York May 10th. And then you can find me online at Allison Raskin or at Emotional Support Lady, which is my mental health account.
Well, thank you again so much for being with us. It's been a wonderful conversation. And I just have to ask you, at the end of all of our series, Erica and I have a deep dive question that we would like to ask you.
I'm ready.
Okay, she's ready. Allison, what is your superpower?
Oh, interesting. I think compassion, both, you know, for myself and for other people.
I love
compassion.
That.
Love that. I love that. We haven't heard that one yet. Believe it or not.
Oh, it's exciting.
Very good. Very good. Thank you, Allison.
Thank you both so much. I had a great time.
And to all our listeners, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Rewiring Your Life. Until next week, be well.